I want to tell you about the Pushkin, State Pushkin Museum of Fine Arts in Moscow and my work in this museum. But I want to tell you the story of this museum. Just a few weeks ago, it celebrates 105th anniversary, the main historical museum building. And sponsors and partners of the museum presented cakes for this celebration party. And some of the cakes were made in forms of the museum itself. And one of the, let's call them naive, and one of the ugliest was the cake that was baked by the building company which won the competition to build the museum. But my story is about not my story, but the story of the museum. I want to tell you through the strata of names, not the collection, not the artists, not the names of that, let's call them board of trustees and of this museum, which, by the way, we used to know well to have the museum as a storage place for the material stuff. But sometimes there are, and of course every item in this museum has a caption. But sometimes there are names that are captions in itself, and I'll start with the chronologically with the name of the Catherine the Great, the Russian emperor who once spent a year in Moscow. It was in 1775, and for this stay Moscow architect Matvey Kazakov was asked to build a temporary palace. And it took a year to design a palace and to build a palace. And then Catherine the Great spent a year in this palace. And to show you what is important for the future, this is the palace. This is the temporary part. And it was connected with already existing buildings. This one, this is Galitzin Estate. Which is now a part of the museum, of Pushkin Museum. This is another estate, which is not a part of the museum. And this place here, not far from Kremlin, by the way, it's a carriage yard. And it was a state land, which lately was given to the museum, to build a museum in this land. The next person absolutely important for the museum was Ivan Svitaev. He's a professor of the State University whose dream was to build a museum for the university. And it was a long-term dream, and he involved a lot of people to share this dream. And he found sponsorship, he found state sponsorship, and finally the museum was built. This is former carriage yard. You see it's surrounded by the scaffolding in this picture. Also, he involved, Ivan Svitaev involved an architect, a very good architect, who was very young when he won the competition. It was in 1995, I guess, the competition for the building of the museum. And the museum was open in 1895 there was a competition, and in 1912 the museum was built. So it took about 17 years for him from the competition project to the final building opening. He an architect invited a lot of artists for the decoration of the different rooms of the museum. And amongst them, in his staff, in his office, by the way, was Lisicki, who just, I think, graduated from the Darmstadt Technical School, came to Moscow and worked in this bureau of Roman Klein. And next important person is Vladimir Shukhov, is a famous, fantastic Russian engineer who designed the roof, the glass roof of the museum, and the total. The roof was about 10,000 square meters, so it's a huge roof, which of course provided the museum with the daylight, and there was no ventilation electrical machines there, so it was only natural ventilation, and it still works. This is the roof with a view to Kremlin. Another person whose role is one of the greatest is the name Yuri Inichaev-Maltsov, who is a glassware manufacturer in Moscow and who covered two-thirds of all the budget of this museum. This is the museum, how it looked in 1912. And you see the form of the museum is quite, let's say, is a classical form, which was very popular at the end of the 19th century. You can compare it with Vienna's museum, Kunsthistorisches Museum, right. And another important person whom you probably know because his name proudly has one of the Parisian bridges is Alexander III, who has nothing to do with this museum because he died even before the first competition. But one of the donors of the museums asked to give this name to the museum, and there was a condition of this donation. The donor was the widow of one of the Russian merchants. This is the facade of the museum. Well, I think it's a Roman Klein production. Then the museum, only 5 years the museum had the name of the Alexander III because the Russian Revolution happened and the museum immediately lost the name of the Alexander III. And for some years it had no any name, just the Museum of Fine Arts. And the collection there was almost non-existing. I mean, there was a collection for the university museum, and it was mostly the museum of copies of the gypsum copies of the Greek and Roman sculptures. But when Bolsheviks started to rule the museum, they started to build the collection. And one of those injections was the collection of Nikolai Rumyantsev. Is a collection from St. Petersburg. They came to Moscow about 50 years earlier, but didn't have the proper place for it. And some of the paintings from these collections, like, for example, a painting of Rembrandt, came to this newly built Museum of Fine Arts. Then, practically at the same time, the museum have got the, as a branch museum, have got the Museum of New Western Art, which was formed by the connection of two collections of two Russian Moscow merchants, Ivan Morozov and Sergei Shukin, whose collection you probably saw just recently. And This collection took place in the estate of Ivan Morozov, both collections in Prechistinka Street, which is also in 10 minutes walk from the from the museum. And they both formally was the collection of the State Museum of Fine Arts. Then a collection of Shukin as well. And so in total, it was a collection of about 700-800 fantastic chef d'oeuvres of the paintings of art from the 19th and 20th century. And some of them, chronologically, in 1937, the museum have got the name of Alexander Pushkin. Alexander Pushkin is a fantastic Russian poet, mostly known in Russia because of Russia language is not so spread in the world like, for instance, English. But anyway, in the middle of '30s, Soviet propaganda decided that the main and the general Russian poet should be Alexander Pushkin. And in 1937, there was a 100th anniversary of his death. And because of his death and this kind of celebration, the museum have got the name of Alexander Pushkin. And since that time, we know this museum as a Pushkin Museum of Fine Arts. At the same 1937, Pushkin Museum hosted exhibitions like this. It's an exhibition of contemporary Soviet sculpture. And you see the sculpture of Stalin and Lenin and Gorky, a writer, and some of the symbolical workers and farmers. And then the war started in 1941. The Germans started to bomb Moscow, and one of the high explosive bomb fell down in about 70 meters from the museum, and the museum in a few seconds lost all this glass envelope on the top. So all these 10,000 square meters fall down to the ground, and for 3.5 years the museum was the museum, the open-air museum, and the snow fell down to the museum, and the employees of the museum put the snow away from the marble floors and so on. This is how the Greek courtyard looked without the glass roof. Then Joseph Stalin also played a great role in the history of the museum. First, he gave the name of Pushkin to the museum. Second, in 1948, he closed the Museum of Western Art at all, and there was a real danger that all those chef d'oeuvres collected by Shukin and Morozov would be demolished. And in order to avoid of it, the collection was shared for two parts between the Hermitage Museum and Pushkin Museum. And the biggest paintings and biggest part of the collection traveled to Hermitage Museum away from Moscow, and the smallest part still is at the Pushkin Museum, and plus at the, I think in 1949 or 48 or 49, the same year or the same time, the museum have got the collection of gifts to Stalin from people of Soviet Union and countries of the world. And until 1953, the museum hosted the gifts to Stalin, not the kind of pieces of art. And it looked like that. By the way, this is the corner of the gifts from the France to Stalin. And in 1961, the director of the museum have got the new director. It was Irina Antonova, and Irina Antonova is the longest, plate director and museum director in the world, and she was on her post like more than 50 years, I think. And she made a lot of exhibitions, and by the way, it was her exhibition, it was her activity to have an exhibition Moscow-Paris in 1980. And her last activity is to, well, there are two activities actually. One activity is to bring back all those pieces from Hermitage to Moscow, which is, I share this opinion that this is better to have the collection in full here in Moscow, in the countryside of these two merchants than in St. Petersburg. And the other activity is to build a museum quarter, which is actually the original idea of Ivan Tsvetaev. He dreamed to have the whole quarter around the main building fulfilled with little galleries and so on. He didn't think that the museum would come to the for those estates of the Dolgorukis or Golitsyns and so on, but it was just a dream, I think. And now the Irina Alexandrovna came with his dream to our president, and in 2007, I think, the government decided to finance this dream and to build this museum quarter. And this is the museum quarter. Now, here, this is the main building. This is the Museum of Private Collections. It was built as a museum on the private collections. It was built in one of the wings of this estate. And now this is the Impressionist are here. This is the Museum of Private Collection is now here, and it has an extension. It's in another building, which is now a depository, but it should be another museum exhibition space. This is under construction right now, the for the Old Masters Gallery, so-called, is estate of Dolgorukis. And as I said, this is the Galitsyn estate, where should be the collection of Shukin and Morozov. And then Irina Alexandrovna invited Norman Foster to work on this museum quarter. And Foster, his idea, his main idea, was to connect all these different Russian town villas by the underground space. And you see, this is the main building, this is our building, this is building of Dolgoruki estate, and this is Foster building, which he wanted to have in this space. And also, right in front of the Cathedral of Christ the Savior, Norman Foster wanted to have the new building of this five leaves shape. And there were a lot of protests in Moscow, and this decision to build an underground space and to build this new space of modern architecture right in front of the, let's say, cathedral, was widely criticized. And in 3 years, Foster left Moscow, I mean, left this project, I think not because of these reasons or protests, because in 2007, the underground space and the budget was formed according to his project, and it's now at the state decree. And those people who won the victory over Foster, they wanted, they celebrated this victory too early, because the whole concept of the underground space just, well, easily survived. And another competition, which was made on this space amongst the Soviet Moscow architects, was on the same concept. And the winner, Yuri Gagarin, the winner of this competition, still working on the underground space. But he digged it even deeper than Foster wanted to have it. For example, the space right under the main building is now about 12 meters depth, I would say. And now I'll come back to our building, to where I'm involved, which was built by Matvey Kozakov, also because of this, as I said at the beginning, commission from the Catherine the Great. I mean that the original building was built by Sava Chivakinsky, architect from St. Petersburg, but nobody know how did it look, because all we know how it was redesigned by Matvey Kozakov according to Catherine the Great choice. And he redesigned it in this, in like the facade is from the middle 70s of the 18th century. Very nice classical building, which in the whole family of Galitzin's father, uncle, nephew holded this building during 19th century. Sergei Galitzin, one of the last in this family, I mean, in the Soviet time, in Russian time, he was a director of the Galitzin Hospital. The whole family was a philanthropical, very philanthropical family. In 1811, they opened Galitzin Hospital, which, by the way, had a special gallery for art because they think that art can cure, is able to cure people, patients. And also in 1865, in this building, he opened a public museum. That was the first public museum in Moscow. And the family collection was presented there in, I think, on a bel étage in five rooms, five big rooms. There were about 700 items presented there, 200 paintings. I don't have an idea how can one install 200 paintings in just five rooms, but they were installed there. And for 20 years, for three times a week, the museum was open to public. Plus, he also held a library of 20,000 for 20,000 books, which was collected by his uncle. It was also open to public. But then, at the middle of 80s, he sold the whole collection to the state, so that means to Hermitage, and the whole collection moved to Hermitage, and one of the gems of the collections of the collection was the crucifixion by Pietro Perugino, which is 1930, was sold to America, and now it's at the National Museum of Art in Washington. Then, in the Soviet time, another five rooms, maybe the same rooms, maybe there were rooms on the first floor, was taken by Vasily Kandinsky, who was a director of so-called Museum of Artistic Culture at that time. The museum collected works of avant-garde at this time and widely sent it to provincial museums in Russia. And but he was there only until 1920, and then the state stopped financed the avant-garde art, and Kandinsky moved to back to Germany. But this is one of the picture, one of the photos of that time, where the where is the collection of this? It worked like a terminal for for putting art through the whole territory of the of Soviet Russia. Then the building was taken by so-called Socialist Academy, then it was renamed to Communist Academy, and there was a number of names under this title, like Trotsky, Zinoviev, Kamenev, Bukharin, and others who were just lately were repressed by Stalin. They used this building for like ideological institute, and unknown or anonymous architect added two more stories to this building. And the building in 1930 looked like this one. And this architect removed the fronton from the main facade, and you see that it's built like it was newly built. There is no differences between two historical floors and two new floors in this building. And in the courtyard of this building, there was this bomb explosion. Then here we are. So one of these two figures on the right is me, and on the left there is my partner. We were invited to make a project of reconstruction, restoration for this building as a museum. This is how it looked. How this building looks now. There is no fronton, as you see. So we came to the museum 3.5 years ago, and we are right in the middle of the way. So the building should be finished in 2021, probably. I hope. What we started with, it was not easy because in 1960 this building became a historical monument. That means that we cannot change anything there. But fortunately, the upper part was built in such a kind of low quality that we should replace all the materials of the upper floors. And rebuilt like it was. That was the rule. What we proposed, and you see it's in the same scale. On the left, the facade of Roman Klein. On the right, facade of Matvey Kozakov. In red, there is a lost part of it. This is how it looked according to this anonymous architect in the 30s. And that was our first proposal that we did like about 3 years ago. To put the glass cover on top of this building, and to move back the fronton of the lost front of the building, and fortunately it worked because the Ministry of Culture liked, well, of course, the people who worked in Ministry of Culture or in special so-called methodological committee of the Ministry of Culture. The committee consisted from the quite conservative type of people, restorers, mostly, and they just hate glass, just hate. And of course, when they see glass, it's 100% awful. But at the same time, they've got the facade of the old villa again. And that was for them ambivalent decision, and finally they selected this proposal because this proposal gave them the possibility, or to people, the possibility to see the historical facade. But under this glass cover there is still the same two Soviet stories, but we just moved them a little bit to the center of the building. There are names of the collection there. This is the rear view to the facade. And there are some plans that we did also 3 years ago. And the main thing on the ground floor was using of this technical corridor of the villa. One of the biggest problem in Russian museums is the wardrobe, because of the winter, because it takes a lot of place, and we finally put it to this corridor, made it mechanical, and we solved the problem. It was easy. And we've got a number of rooms here on the ground floor. When the restorers started this project, they won the competition, the tender. When the restorers started, because of the lack of the museum experience, they named like these fantastic 50 square meters rooms. They called it, this is the office of the director, this is office of the director's secretary, this is office of director's typewriter. So that was like that. And we prefer to give it to the art, these rooms. Give it to the art. Well, it's another floor. So this is the main floor, and we more or less know what kind of art should be on the walls. This is the new, we call it third and fourth floor. The upper floor is under the glass roof, and this is the ground floor. This is four stories, 4 meters high. The main floor is 6 meters high. Then this store that we think is for graphic and photo art, so the art that avoids light is 4 meters. Then again, 6 meters. This is you see the construction of the cover, and I would also say that it has natural ventilation. Is it like two-skin facade, and the upper part of this glass has natural ventilation, and it's a tile system that we use there. This is what we have in the model. This is the view of the upper floor. Every floor is about 800 square meters. And in total, we have here the cost of 1 meter is about 3,500 euros. That is, if to compare it with the average price for square meters in the world, is almost two times less, because the average is 5,300 euros. So the museum is seeking for a sponsorship like it was 105 years ago. Then it's the Bel Etage, and this is room of Matisse. This is room of Banar and Mayol, and we are planning to have here terrazzos, the same as in the main building. This is a ground floor room of Renoir. And of course, we have a number of service spaces, like cafe, restaurant with a view to cathedral, and cafeteria, and gift shop. And so this is cafeteria. We design the furniture in a sort of as homage to Vladimir Shukhov, an engineer, and his hyperboloid construction. This is a wine cellar. And this is the view from the Patriarch Bridge to the building, which is here. And this is the main, with it, this is the main building. And this is the end.